Hey, everybody. Welcome to Generation Now, the show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I'm your host, Troy McDonald. Today is all about your mental health. During these unprecedented times, our generation has faced a future that is extremely uncertain. Those who were about to enter college, who were going to grad school, or who were about to make a career change, saw those hopes dashed or changed for the foreseeable future. It's scary. It's alarming. But it's important that we take care of ourselves so that we can shape the world as we see fit in the future. My guests today are here to help us help ourselves by creating a plan to live our best lives in this pandemic. Please welcome Nicole Gustafson and Katie Laurie, student support counselors at Gateway Technical College. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us. We're really excited to have this conversation because we are definitely in the thick of all things COVID and all things mental health. So it's great to be a part of the conversation. Thank you.
Great. So first of all, I just want to ask how you guys are doing. I mean, how your families are holding up, how you're doing personally during this crisis.
That's really kind of you to ask. Thank you. This is Nicole speaking for me. Every day feels both the same and really different. Katie and I both, and she can jump in a sec, but we both have small humans, and we have a lot, like business is busy in the world of therapy, because obviously people are experiencing a lot of the, you know, similar concerns and reactions and uncertainties. So it's a lot to juggle. And when you are in the business of care, and helping others, it's a great reminder of how important self-care practices are. So that's really, I think, at the forefront for us as clinicians, or just I'll speak for myself as a clinician, to be able to, you know, help other people practice their self-care as well.
Completely agree. I think that it's difficult to know what self-care looks like in this situation for us and for the people that we interact with and for our families, the people that we support in other places. And so to answer your question, how are we doing? Stressed and like doing the best we can every day, you know. It's Groundhog Day every day, like Nicole said, but each day also presents itself really different. I usually tell people that we yell on Wednesdays and cry on Thursdays. And that pattern seems pretty consistent. So I might like write that down and say that's what we do, but next week it'll be totally different.
Is it fair to classify COVID-19 as a form of trauma? I mean, is it appropriate to grieve? Because, you know, so many people have had their lives changed. Is it appropriate to grieve the loss, the change of life surrounding COVID-19?
100%, absolutely. Absolutely. I because everybody has adjusted something. Everybody's lost something. And I don't think that there's a way to measure, like, what that looks like for every single person. But everybody's lost something, adjusted.
Yeah, I echo Katie's sentiments. I completely agree. When we think about what trauma is, it is really the disruption of one's life and one's functioning and one's development based on something that is perceived by the person experiencing whatever that might be to be highly traumatic or disruptive or painful or challenging. So I absolutely agree that I would classify it as such, yes.
And there are some people who have had the opposite reaction. They've become insular, you know, and maybe that's not good either. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. But there are some people who have become completely insular, and they're okay with that. Is that healthy?
I think it sort of depends maybe on the baseline for someone, you know. Yes. There might be people who really are thriving in this time, that, you know, their lifestyle has already been perhaps, like you said, more insular and maybe having less of a presence in society and more of a presence, you know, in another online community or in a connection that's more virtual. So this isn't a huge paradigm shift for those individuals, potentially. And so it may not feel like such a different time or such a loss at all for them.
I agree. I mean, I've definitely connected with some people who wonder if something's wrong with them because they feel like I feel good. I feel comfortable. I like working from home. I like being closer to my family or whatever that looks like. But I think that it depends on, of course, every single person's circumstance. And so like a lot of people already maybe lived a little bit like this. My partner works from home often. And so in our household, his adjustment has been really different than the rest of ours. So I think it, you know, like all things, it depends on where you're coming from and what your experience is ahead of time. But to be comfortable in this space, I don't think is wrong.
Yeah, no, because for me, it's been great. I mean, I have my own home studio. I have my mixer. I have a microphone that looks just like the studio one that we have. And I've been able to be more effective,
you sure. know,
what I do. And so, but yeah, but some people, like you said, it's all about that baseline. And I totally understand that. What has surprised you guys about the national and perhaps even international reaction to COVID-19 from your perspectives as clinicians?
I'm thinking about this. I'm like, so we're thinking about this as clinicians, not necessarily our personal politics on this one.
I think speaking as from my counselor role, the level of extreme, the difference that everyone, there's a large differentiation, right, in how people feel about this. I call it the pendulum. The pendulum swings pretty far in both directions. And so sitting with people who feel, you know, invincible, and then sitting with people who are living in a lot of fear and feeling really trapped. So I think for me, that is surprising and interesting.
And with what Katie had said, I think that there are some themes that are popping up clinically where there are sensations of hopelessness, mm-hmm. or sensations of a lack of agency or ability for, yes. a lot of individuals that really is taking some adjusting to, because we've had some really amazing folks who are like able to like set their mind to something and absolutely do it and do it beautifully and overcome obstacles. And right now the universe isn't exactly, you know, ripe for opportunity to be, yeah. able to go ahead and do the things that a lot of folks are accustomed to doing. And so there is a need to recalibrate some of the expectations that people have for themselves and for what they're able to do, and for just kind of the recognition of this is bigger than us in a lot of ways, and that we don't always get to control the reaction, whether it's nationally, globally, you know, the sanctions that have happened or the measures in place that are designed in theory to keep the virus from spreading, though, has also rendered some people feeling like there's a shift in their sense of self or their abilities as well.
And it's, yeah. fascinating. It's fascinating you say that, because what I'm hearing from that is that people have lost some semblance of control.
Right.
When you, yeah. see people rushing out and hoarding toilet paper, uh-huh. and all of those things. I mean, again, you guys are the experts, but I get a sense that that's maybe one of the only things that they control is how much toilet paper they have, how many supplies they have for their families.
Well, I think you're seeing a lot of reactionary sense of need of control on all levels, right? The hoarding is a sense of control. Like getting out and seeing my friends at a bar is a sense of control. And in that way, like how all of us try to project what we can control is really different. It looks really different. It's kind of threatening to each other sometimes.
That's interesting. I didn't even think about that. We're projecting. All these decisions are basically projecting our self-worth in a way, what mm-hmm. we think about ourselves. Wow. Aha moment. I didn't even think about that. That's why you're here, to enlighten all of us. My fear is that some people are going to lose the ability to dream big, to make big plans. I was planning personally on moving to Cambridge on Harvard's campus, where I'm a distance learning student at Harvard. So I've been going back and forth anyways. But not only was the campus closed that I was planning on spending even more time at, but they initiated a hiring freeze. My goal was to get hired there and, you know, just work and live on campus pretty much. So the next chapter I envisioned for myself just completely gone, dashed. By the time this thing breaks potentially next year, I'll be almost done with my program. So how can one go about creating a new dream for themselves? I know I'm not the only one who had a very similar story where they had this whole plan, especially in millennial and Gen Z, our generations, had a whole plan for the next year and a half that's essentially changed or gone. How do we go about creating a new dream for ourselves?
Wow, your story and your experience, Troy, with just kind of knowing the perspective that you bring to the table is really helpful for us too as we try to navigate that, you know, that topic with you. I think this is a very dynamic situation that, again, I will say is, it's like there involves a little bit of self-surrender in the sense that we don't have to let go of all of our aspirations, or folks don't have to let go of plans, but to know that maybe the silver lining of this time is that there's other skills that are being developed that maybe speak to things that wouldn't really fit with someone who's got a great plan and has been working towards that and is really focused on that. Something like adaptability or flexibility, or like finding the silver lining of like, what is the opportunity of what is being presented now to you or to someone else who is really finding this, you know, possibly really unpleasant hiatus on their path or on their journey. And to be a little bit, you know, Buddhist about that, it's sort of like, you know, nothing was ever going to be permanent anyway. Change is inevitable. And what can we learn from what is happening right now? So my long-winded answer to that is that I don't know that those aspirations and those dreams have to at all be gone. But maybe there's a little bit of a detour, and in that detour, we can think of that as an opportunity to really learn about ourselves and learn about how we react to things, we respond to things, and to try to visualize, you know, the hardship as something that can actually be an area or an opportunity for growth in a way that maybe was not expected.
And I completely echo what Nicole's saying, right? That this is potentially just this big, bright life lesson about pausing and finding our way, and that we don't have control over what happens, but that we can still adapt to what our next big thing is. But I think I also want to acknowledge that in like a coping way, that it's important that we grieve the things that change, that we acknowledge them and say, I'm really sad and upset and scared about this, because we should honor that experience. Mm-hmm. And in the moment, in the very moment, like Troy, you're talking about dreaming big, and I love to dream big, man. I am a huge fan of that. but sometimes we have to just like, what is my like today, right? In the moments that where our big dreams have to shift and that really hurts, like what is my today? What is my dream for today? Or what is my goal for today? And it can be really small, and we check that box, because it's like, that's how we're creating our resilience to being able to make that dream big again.
Wow. I have goosebumps because I didn't even think about it that way. I really didn't. You know, I've been in not the grieving stage, because I've been through other things, you know, and I guess I didn't allow myself to grieve. I just said, I got to just suck it up. I just got to continue. But you're right. I have to acknowledge what happened, because I've been in the program for this is my year in. So I was going to finish my last year on campus, and instead of going back and forth with which was a chore. And I mean, but I'm grateful that, you know, I was allowed to do that, but you're right. But that is sad. That happened. But then what's the lesson in today? And I think it is the adaptability, the fact that I've been able to, you know, create something new. I know a lot of parents feel too in this moment that they see their kids going through this. And I know this is the case with me and so many other parents who are sometimes stepping in as teachers for their younger ones. How can parents be most effective now in their role? And is it even fair to expect some sort of comfort as an older child myself, who's in their late 20s, to even expect that? Because my mom's going through stuff. My parents are going through stuff. So how can parents be most effective? And should we even expect them to be effective?
Well, I think Katie and I are going to be of one mind on this one, that you never stop being a parent regardless of how old your kids are. So I think you can expect that there could be comfort from your caregivers. I think that that doesn't go away. And I mean, I think that we look for comfort from the places in our life and the people in our life that are the safe, you know, our safe people that we know are going to love us and be there for us at our best, at our worst, at everything in between. So I don't think that ever goes away, you know, regardless of how old you are. And I think that sometimes parents just need to ask what their kiddos need, regardless of how old they are, you know, whether it's millennial, Gen Z, whatever, like, you know, what can I do to support you right now? How can I help? How can I be there for you? And, you know, in my household, I struggle with trying to help my children understand their privilege. But then I get so on my manifesto about their privilege and their entitlement that I sometimes need to take a step back and recognize that I need to provide, maybe in that moment, they might need some compassion or some empathy, because their reality has shifted also. And even though, you know, they don't realize that what they're experiencing isn't maybe as traumatic or as devastating as someone else's, it's still their reality. So I think parents need to be leaning in and asking how they can support their children and how they can be there for them regardless of their age.
Nicole and I spend a lot of time talking about this amongst ourselves, being people who are at home with young people during this time. And I think that there's just no right answer, man. There's just no good way. And everyone's life is so different. You know, are you a working parent? Are you a leaving the house and going to work parent right now? What are your needs to try to, like, get your kids through school, if that's a thing? There's just so many dimensions. And then we add age to it, Troy, like you're saying, like as a quote unquote grown child who also could use some comfort and support. It's just really complicated. And I think, like, genuineness, right? Authenticity is sort of a really valuable moment, what Nicole's talking about, where I can say, like, what do you need right now? And a lot of days I feel like none of us know what that answer is. And so we just sort of fumble through, and it's pretty messy. And I think acknowledging that messiness is totally fine. It's so fine. Adjusting our thinking, right? Like, we went from, like, the grind, the day-to-day school work, everything was measured in this really particular way. And now that's undone. And we're trying to measure what? I don't know. And each household is different in their needs, but a lot of breathing and a lot of just like, I don't know, parent shaming is, we do it to ourselves the most, and we really gotta, right now, I think I push the most at, like, quieting that. Like, there's no room for the parent shame right now on ourselves or on each other.
Right. And Mom, before you text me, you have been fantastic.
Sure, she's amazing.
Yeah, no, she's been great. It's just, I feel guilty. I guess that's what I should have clarified. It's just, I feel guilty for even asking or saying, Mom, I'm having a bad day, or school is really difficult, or because I'm still doing online stuff. You know, just, you know, I'm going through it. Well, she's going through it. And I guess for me, it's like being older, the guilt of, like, should I even ask? Should I even, I don't know. But you're right. That, I guess it's not unfair to expect that, but Mom, you're great. You're fine. So
I bet she feels awesome that you reach out to her, Troy.
Oh, yes.
That's agreed. A good feeling as a parent.
Agreed.
Totally. Yes.
So we've seen some families, instead of kind of cleaving together or relying on each other, split apart because some see maybe wearing masks and believing science as a sign of weakness or whatever. There've been so many political and just hard divides between families. How can we go about continuing those relationships, or even if we should, and maintaining those with people we disagree with, family members we disagree with?
Well, Katie's had to listen to me talk about some of, I mean, I can speak to this directly. I have this challenge in my family as well. And, sometimes it's pressing the pause button, and it's not we need to end our relationship kind of thing, but it might just be, we need to take a step back, and there are certain things that we're just not going to get into at this point. So let's just mutually sit with some, distance from that particular subject to be able to allow us to not damage our relationship, because we are so invested in, our differing viewpoints about this. But for families who live together, that's an entirely separate thing. But families have presumably been navigating through how to deal with disagreements or, parenting calls or squabbles for hopefully a decent amount of time, that they'd be able to navigate some sort of compromise. However, a virus doesn't really care about your compromise if like one part of the household is like practicing certain safety measures and the other part isn't. So it, as I think about this, I really think it comes down to communication. What's really at stake? Is it pride? Is it ego? Is it, health? Is it science? Like, what is this really about for people? And you can't know that unless people are willing to communicate about their needs and about their fears, because this is a really scary time for a lot of us.
Completely agree with that statement, right? Fear is sort of at the baseline of all of this. And I think we perceive people who want things to be normal again as not having any fear, when really I just suspect that their fear is that they just are scared it will never go back to normal. And so there's something to prove, like if I can go about life one way that looks familiar, that I'll still be safe. My partner and I just had this conversation because we were talking about a social distance visit with friends, like family friends that also have young kids. And he was like, I don't know that we can keep the kids from being close. Like, have you really thought about that? And it surprised me. I was like, you know what? We haven't checked in. Like, we haven't really talked about what makes you feel safe, what makes me feel safe as we move forward in this world. And everything's so shook up right now. So I guess my advice to people who are struggling with like communicating this to their families or feel like we're all disrespecting each other is to just like wait. Like, we need to see. We need to see how everything comes down and where things land. We're really, really, really at the beginning of this. And so like communicate, talk, respect each other's opinions and decisions, because that's the bottom line, right? We're going to need to do what makes us feel safe, and we're going to need to respect each other for doing that. And then let's see what happens in 6 months to 2 years, which is a long time when we're uncomfortable.
Both of you are working at Gateway, your counselors, dealing with the student body. It must be so uncomfortable to deal with some of the student population who might not have the resources to continue their schooling and might lose a job or something like that. What are some of the issues you've been dealing with in the student body, and how have you been able to adapt and be able to serve them?
So the issues have been varied for me. And there are some people who their hardship is really profound, in that their learning has to stop because they might not have the resources. They might not have internet. They might not have, the technology that they need, or they might not have anyone who's able to care for their, their children, for example, if they need to be doing coursework. Or so like there's some folks who are really like questioning whether or not they can continue. And as this Gateway does a really great job of helping people get from like point A to point B. And a lot of people are really ready to be at point B, but right now they're questioning whether or not that's feasible for them. Mm-hmm. And so there's those kinds of conversations, and there's some things that we've put in place as a college to try to offer some emergency assistance and some technology assistance. But then that brings us to the second, one of the second things that sometimes comes up, which is the discomfort or uncertainty with a virtual learning environment, that some people, that's not what they were planning on. And now, COVID is like, well, just kidding. Like, this is how learning is happening, you know, as you know, Troy, in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. But some people, you know, for a variety of really legit reasons are not able to, or don't feel like they're able to participate in that kind of learning experience. And then of course I've got a couple of folks who are dealing with the very real struggle of a COVID diagnosis, you know, and trying to then figure out what happens next for themselves with that situation. So it runs the gamut really.
Exactly. I mean, and everybody is experiencing usually more than one level of adaption or stress, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs here, right? Is school really the most important thing when you are worried about groceries? So, but when then we want to focus on school, what are the needs and is the population adapted to that? Like Gateway extended their Wi-Fi through the parking lot so that students who didn't have it at home could at least come to campus and sit in their car and do work. And so it's just a lot of adapting and a lot of stress in that. And then the amplification of finances, homeschooling. Yeah, it's all of it, but there's many layers. I don't think that we deal with very many people who are just dealing with one thing right now.
Well, and I want to jump in too, because we've talked about this as a team, but also the rates of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. You're in a really unsafe situation potentially, and you don't have the ability
nowhere to go to
get out of it right now. And so the rates of domestic violence are increasing, and that's when we talk about, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like just being safe, you know, like that's for some people, like that's not even. That doesn't feel like they're not in a very safe place, and right. It makes it really hard to do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So we're winding down, and I want to just ask one final question to both of you. You guys have just been so informative and so great to the audience here. And I know all of you who are listening, you're going to create that plan for yourselves to be able to figure out your next steps, because it's all unknown. It's all up in the air. But if both of you were members of the millennial generation or Gen Z generation, what would be the one takeaway that you would tell yourself?
I think I would say that we have more in common than we don't. And there's more that connects us than doesn't. And that this is a time that really no humans that are in your, you know, that are in the Gen Z or millennial generation or generations that have come before can really understand. And so there isn't a schema or a script for how this is supposed to go. And to practice a lot of self-compassion and to practice a lot of grace for others as well. And to know that also nothing is permanent and that change is inevitable. And so what things look like right now, maybe it's not going to look this way in the coming years, but that maybe this is a really great opportunity to connect with what's meaningful in life or what feels meaningful in life and what brings us joy and brings happiness and finding a sense of purpose and really just trying to find the silver lining while also just recognizing that this is really, really, really a hard time and that it's okay to not be okay. And that it's also okay to get help if you need it. And it's okay to feel like some days it's too much and some days like it seems like, okay, I can do this. So really just establishing that self-compassion for yourself and for others and to not give up.
And I mean, I'm going to echo like Nicole's beautiful statement about like one world, one people, right? We're all in this together. There needs to be patience with the process, with ourselves. We need to see what happens next and to take it as it comes. And that's really just what life is anyways, because as she stated, you know, change is inevitable and we don't really have control over that. But then to trust, like trust yourself and trust this process. We really have to believe in like the good of each other and in ourselves and be patient. And that's hard. That's really hard for me, patience. But it's really important that we trust that this will change and that hopefully we will make something better from it.
I can't think of a better way to end this program. I mean, just so beautiful. Thank you for that. I want to thank my incredible guests for joining us, Nicole Gustafson and Katie Laurie, student support counselors at Gateway Technical College. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Until next time, bye everybody.